The airport has been closed since early morning when an Indonesian cargo plane, a Boeing 737, arriving at Banda Aceh, hit a cow that had strayed onto the runway. The landing gear and the engine were badly damaged and the plane came to rest two-thirds of the way down the runway. Military planners here say they've no lifting gear big enough to move it. Though in the last few hours they have called in help from the Singapore Air Force, the solution seemingly to float the aircraft with airbags and roll it out of the way. The US Navy say for the moment they have enough aid here to move by helicopter to outlying regions, but they make it clear that opening the runway is a priority for the aid operation. They have scores of flights waiting to come in from elsewhere in Indonesia. And the longer the problem continues, the more difficult it will be to increase the flow of aid that is so urgently needed.
The United Nations has put the latest death toll in the disaster at around 150,000 and warned that the figure could rise sharply if disease takes hold. The number of injured is expected to exceed the number of dead, with many people suffering from severe crush injuries similar to those of car crash victims. Relief agencies have appealed for surgical equipment and antibiotics to treat the survivors. The American Secretary of State Colin Powell and President Bush's brother Jeb are in Thailand at the start of a visit to the region to help assess the huge reconstruction needs. Mr. Powell said the biggest problem now was not money, but how best to distribute it. Tony Cheng has sent this report from Bangkok.
The central message that Mr. Powell wanted to convey was one of solidarity with the victims of the Asian tsunami. The United States would not turn away from those in desperate need, he said. Standing next to the president's brother, Governor Jeb Bush, he went on to say that the U.S. would work with Thailand and other countries to establish a long-term tsunami warning system and to help mitigate environmental damage. However, Mr. Powell's real mission starts when he visits the resort town of Phuket later today. He wants to see the true extent of the damage and the effectiveness of the relief effort, after which both he and Governor Bush can decide on the allocation and scale of U.S. aid relief.
The Chancellor, Gordon Brown, is calling for the G8 list of most wealthy countries to suspend all debt repayments by the countries affected by the tsunami disaster. This would save the struggling countries billions of pounds a year. Our political correspondent, Norman Smith, reports.
It's estimated that countries like Indonesia and Sri Lanka currently pay around £3 billion a year each in debt interest. The Chancellor's view is that there's little point in Western governments seeking to provide emergency financial aid to such countries, only to claw the money back through debt repayments. Over the past few days, officials say Mr. Brown has been involved in intensive talks with fellow finance ministers over a moratorium on all debt repayments. Treasury officials say Mr. Brown is now confident of winning the backing of the White House for the move and expects to be able to announce a deal within days. They say Mr. Brown is also pressing for the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund to carry out an analysis of all the debts owed by countries affected by the tsunami disaster, with a view to writing off a significant proportion of them.
An Indian helicopter dropping food and water over the remote Andaman and Nicobar Islands has been attacked by tribesmen using bows and arrows. There had been fears that the primitive group had been wiped out. More than 6,000 people there are confirmed as either dead or missing, and thousands of others are still unaccounted for. From the Andaman Islands, our correspondent, Jonathan Charles.
The Indian Coast Guard helicopter was flying low over Sentinel Island to drop aid when it came under attack. Dozens of tribesmen fired arrows at the helicopter, a traditional warning that outsiders aren't welcome. A senior police officer said the crew weren't hurt, and it proved that the tribes hadn't been wiped out by the earthquake and sea surges, as many had feared. The Andaman and Nicobar archipelago is home to several primitive tribes, some so isolated that they're still stuck in the Stone Age. Officials believe they survived the devastation by using traditional early warning systems. They might have run to high ground for safety after noticing changes in the behaviour of birds and marine wildlife.
Official documents released under the Freedom of Information Act show that for nearly 20 years, the British Army operated a policy of institutional racism. From 1957, Army medical officers were instructed to make a note of all ethnic minority recruits to make sure that not too many joined up. Our correspondent, John Brain, has been examining the files.
Between 1957 and the mid-70s, fewer than 2% of Army recruits were non-whites. The documents released for the first time today reveal the low numbers may have been, at least in part, the result of a deliberate and highly secret policy. A briefing paper written for the Adjutant General in 1972 explains how medical officers were instructed to make a note of all recruits whose features were anything other than North European. It says this was to ensure that quota restrictions were being adhered to. The policy was considered so sensitive that government ministers were kept out of the loop. And when the then Institute of Race Relations requested a breakdown of non-white soldiers, the army spent 9 months agonizing over how to respond before deciding on a direct lie. It flatly denied that it kept any information on ethnic backgrounds.
A car bomb has exploded in central Baghdad. A policeman at the scene has reported that at least 4 people were killed. It's the latest in a series of similar attacks across Iraq over the last few days that have claimed more than 30 lives. Yesterday, 3 British civilians working for a security company died in a suicide attack in the Iraqi capital. Michael Howard sets out the shape of the Conservative Party's election campaign today with a promise to tackle crime, immigration and public disorder. In a speech in Northamptonshire, the Tory leader will unveil his introduction to the party's election manifesto, which he says will offer the people of Britain a change in direction. Our political correspondent, Carol Walker, reports.
Michael Howard knows he needs to start building momentum, with the general election expected in just 5 months' time and his party still trailing behind Labour's comfortable lead in the polls. The introduction to his party's manifesto promises to cut the size of government, increase police numbers, and set annual immigration limits. He's promising to restore integrity to government, but he doesn't quite give the firm pledge to cut taxes that many in his party would like, saying, "When we can, we will lower taxes." The Tories say they'll flesh out specific proposals in the weeks and months to come. But Labour have already dismissed today's launch. Their election coordinator, Alan Milburn, said Michael Howard's approach would take Britain back to a failed Tory past.
A survey has revealed that an astonishingly high proportion of the nation's business leaders were prefects when they were at school. Of 105 chief executives and main board directors in the UK's biggest companies, 90% had been a prefect, head boy or girl, or a sports captain. The Human Resources Group that commissioned the survey says it shows that future leaders can be spotted in the playground.
9 minutes past seven. There's certainly no sign of a slackening in the intensity of America's engagement in the aid effort in Asia this morning. The retiring Secretary of State, Colin Powell, has arrived in Thailand with President Bush's brother, Jeb. Mr. Bush, who is, of course, the governor of Florida and therefore has some experience of managing an emergency, expressed his solidarity with those who are suffering there.
My hope is that after the relief efforts, which you all have handled so well, subside, that the long-term recovery efforts will go well and that the United States, both the citizens of the United States as well as our government, will be with you shoulder to shoulder to provide support.
And Colin Powell explained how the United States plans to help.
Each country has a different set of needs, and what we're going to do is assess those needs. The financial need of Thailand is not as great as financial aid, say, in Indonesia or Sri Lanka. They will need reconstruction assistance. We talked earlier about whether or not our reconnaissance planes could help them in analyzing the mangrove area beyond the beach line. There may be many bodies located in these mangrove areas. Is there any way we can help with that? Forensic support, reconstruction support. That's the kind of support Thailand will need, and not direct financial assistance. Other nations may have a greater need for direct financial assistance.
Well, later in the week, Mr. Powell will be in Indonesia, in the capital, Jakarta, for a conference on the world's response to the disaster. Heather Hill speaks on behalf of the World Food Programme, a UN operation in South Asia. She's in Thailand at the moment, and she joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning.
Do you have a clear idea of the kind of distinctions that Colin Powell was making there? In other words, are you confident about which countries need what kind of help at the moment?
Yes, we are, because there have been UN assessment missions in the countries that were impacted by the tsunami crisis. So, for example, in Thailand, we know that there is basically an adequate food supply. It's simply a matter of the distribution channels, of making sure that the food is efficiently getting to the people who need it most. Whereas in Indonesia, in Banda Aceh, we know that there are coastal villages and outlying communities that are difficult to get to, where there is no aid. Until these recent deliveries by air began, there was no food supply at all, or virtually none. So yes, indeed, there is a distinction between the needs of the various countries.
And is the picture that you've built up feeding through into the way the overall aid operation is working? Are countries which have particular kinds of abilities to help directing their efforts to where they're needed most?
Yes, I think that's true. Certainly we've all remarked upon this unprecedented outpouring of aid. It really is remarkable. And I've seen it, the offers coming from private citizens. I got a phone call this morning from an agricultural producer in the Netherlands who wants to contribute several thousand tons of potatoes and onions, right up to the extremely generous offers from the leading members of the donor community. So there's no question that the offers of aid are there, that it is coming in, and it's now a matter of proper coordination of the relief.
There's this conference in Jakarta later in the week to discuss what should happen next. Where do you think that should be concentrating its attention?
I think that the conference will probably want to look at how the relief can be properly coordinated in order to avoid any kind of duplication and in order to make sure that all the needs are met. There needs to be an overall coordinating structure, as we have with the UN agencies, to make sure that nobody is forgotten in this thing, that 6 months from now there are no stories coming out about people who were neglected or to whom no aid was ever conveyed.
Heather Hill, many thanks.
You're listening to Today on Radio 4 with Edward Sturton and Carolyn Quinn. It's 8 o'clock on Tuesday, the 4th of January. The headlines this morning. The huge relief operation to the Indian Ocean has suffered a setback. An accident has closed the only airport in the worst-hit area. A top-level American delegation started a tour of the region to see what more can be done. Also this morning, the governor of Baghdad has been assassinated, and evidence of past racism in the British Army. Today's newsreader is Charlotte Green.
An army of aid workers, military and civilian, is now engaged in the unprecedented relief effort to help the survivors of the Asian earthquake on Boxing Day. In some areas, food and other supplies have been arriving faster than the infrastructures of the devastated countries can handle. The Indonesian government says 94,000 people are now feared to have died in one of the worst affected provinces, Aceh. And while some aid has been getting through, the United Nations has suffered a setback. An accident at the only provincial airport in Banda Aceh has closed the runway, badly affecting access to the region. Christian Fraser has sent this report.
With aid badly needed here and logistical problems already proving difficult, the closure of the only provincial airport in the region can only hamper the UN operation here. The airport has been closed since early morning when an Indonesian cargo plane, a Boeing 737, arriving at Banda Aceh, hit a cow that had strayed onto the runway. The landing gear and the engine were badly damaged and the plane came to rest two-thirds of the way down the runway. Military planners here say they've no lifting gear big enough to move it. Though in the last few hours they have called in help from the Singapore Air Force, the solution seemingly to float the aircraft with airbags and roll it out of the way. The US Navy say for the moment they have enough aid here to move by helicopter to outlying regions, but they make it clear that opening the runway is a priority for the aid operation. They have scores of flights waiting to come in from elsewhere in Indonesia. And the longer the problem continues, the more difficult it will be to increase the flow of aid that is so urgently needed.
The United Nations has put the latest death toll in the disaster at around 150,000 and warned that the figure could rise sharply if disease takes hold. The number of injured is expected to exceed the number of dead, with many people suffering from severe crush injuries similar to those of car crash victims. Relief agencies have appealed for surgical equipment and antibiotics to treat the survivors. The American Secretary of State Colin Powell and President Bush's brother Jeb are in Thailand at the start of a visit to the region to help assess the huge reconstruction needs. As governor of Florida, Jeb Bush has experience of dealing with the aftermath of natural disasters, specifically hurricanes. Mr. Powell said the biggest problem now was not money, but how best to distribute it among the countries devastated by the huge waves. Tony Cheng has sent this report from Bangkok.
The central message that Mr. Powell wanted to convey was one of solidarity with the victims of the Asian tsunami. The United States would not turn away from those in desperate need, he said.
The aftermath of the tsunami is a tragedy for the entire world, and the United States will certainly not turn away from those in desperate need, and I think we have demonstrated in recent days our willingness to provide support, not only financial support, but the military support that our Pacific Command is now providing.
Standing next to the president's brother, Governor Jeb Bush, he went on to say that the U.S. would work with Thailand and other countries to establish a long-term tsunami warning system and to help mitigate environmental damage. However, Mr. Powell's real mission starts when he visits the resort town of Phuket later today. He wants to see the true extent of the damage and the effectiveness of the relief effort, after which both he and Governor Bush can decide on the allocation and scale of U.S. aid relief.
The Chancellor, Gordon Brown, has called on the G8 group of most wealthy countries to suspend all debt repayments by the countries affected by the tsunami disaster. This would save them billions of pounds a year. Mr. Brown told this programme that the world contribution to deal with aid and reconstruction will rise substantially.
What we are suggesting is an immediate moratorium on debt repayments from the afflicted countries. That would then lead to an analysis of the debt needs of these countries with the possibility of some write-off of debt, and at the same time to ensure that the money actually goes to the areas and people in greatest need in these countries. But that will be backed up by two other proposals. The International Monetary Fund will offer emergency assistance, particularly to the Maldives, Sri Lanka and Indonesia, that could be worth up to $1 billion. The World Bank, which has made an initial contribution for emergency relief, will add to that very substantially over the next few days with money for reconstruction that the President of the World Bank will announce.
Proof has come from the remote Andaman and Nicobar Islands that at least some tribesmen have survived. A helicopter delivering relief supplies was attacked by arrows. No one was hurt. Now other news. Government files released today have revealed that the British Army secretly restricted the number of recruits from ethnic minorities for 20 years. According to the documents from 1957, Army medical officers were instructed to make a note of all recruits with non-North European facial features to help keep a check on the numbers joining up. General Sir Anthony Farrar-Hockley was a commander of a battalion in the 60s. He told Today that they knew nothing about this policy.
I wasn't aware of it happening in front of me because I already had several coloured soldiers in my battalion. I think part of it was there was a feeling that there might be a flood of people into one set of regiments. Government was carrying on a particular form of quotas for people coming in from outside to join the armed forces and in many cases to do civilian jobs. They were quite small compared with what came later.
The governor of Baghdad has been assassinated. Details are sketchy, but police and hospital sources say that Ali al-Haidri was shot dead this morning. News of the shooting came as a powerful bomb went off in the Iraqi capital. One report says at least 6 people have been killed and 40 others wounded. 3 British civilians were among a number of people killed in attacks yesterday. Our correspondent, Jim Muir, reports from Baghdad.
The latest blast was big enough to rattle windows all over the city. It sent a huge column of smoke into the air. There were conflicting early reports about exactly where the explosion took place and what the target was. But staff at a nearby hospital said there was chaos there. It was inundated with casualties brought in by Iraqi police and National Guards, who've been the target of numerous deadly attacks by the insurgents in recent weeks. Most reports indicated the bomb went off just inside the western edge of the Green Zone, where virtually everything is a target the insurgents would like to hit. This was the latest blow in an escalating wave of violence which claimed around 30 lives on Monday. Among many other incidents, there were 2 suicide car bombs just outside the Green Zone, the most heavily protected area in the country.
Hospital officials in the northern Gaza Strip say at least 6 Palestinians have been killed by Israeli tank fire. Several others are reported to have been injured. The Israeli military fired into the town of Beit Lahia in response to mortar attacks from Palestinian militants on a nearby Jewish settlement, which wounded two Israeli settlers. Michael Howard sets out the shape of the Conservative Party's election campaign today, with a promise to tackle crime, immigration and public disorder. In a speech in Northamptonshire, the Tory leader will unveil his introduction to the party's election manifesto, which he says will offer the people of Britain a change in direction. Our political correspondent, Carol Walker, reports.
Michael Howard knows he needs to start building momentum, with the general election expected in just 5 months' time and his party still trailing behind Labour's comfortable lead in the polls. The introduction to his party's manifesto promises to cut the size of government, increase police numbers, and set annual immigration limits. He's promising to restore integrity to government, but he doesn't quite give the firm pledge to cut taxes that many in his party would like, saying, when we can, we will lower taxes. The Tories say they'll flesh out specific proposals in the weeks and months to come. But Labour have already dismissed today's launch. Their election coordinator, Alan Milburn, said Michael Howard's approach would take Britain back to a failed Tory past.
A new survey shows that an overwhelming proportion of Britain's top businessmen and women showed their leadership potential while still at school. Questions put to chief executives and board-level directors in the UK's biggest companies show the vast majority were school prefects, sports captains or head boy or girl. The survey was carried out on behalf of the human resources firm DDI. Our business correspondent Patrick Bartlett reports.
Of the 105 business leaders interviewed by Morrey, 70% had been a school prefect, 30% had captained their sports team, and the same number had risen to head or deputy head of school. 9 out of 10 had held at least 2 positions of responsibility. The idea that future high flyers can be picked out in the playground is not new, but the consultancy which commissioned the research says it was stunned by the high proportion of business leaders for whom this held true. And they suggest that's bad news for management gurus, who claim they can transform someone into a textbook leader. What's clear, they say, is that those who succeed do so because they know what they're good at, and they have the confidence and perseverance to stick at it.
Patrick Bartlett. It's 10 minutes past 8.